Good morning, everyone. We're going to call the Government Operations Election Policy Committee meeting to order. We're going to divert from the agenda briefly here. We're going to take up House File 2956. Representative Kosnick needs to be in two places at one time, so we're going to try and accommodate. And Representative Kosnick, I have a note here that this should be going to the General Register. So I will make a motion that House File 2956 be referred to the General Register. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Great to be here. This bill is for the Dakota County CDA, or Community Development Association, which manages over 2,700 units of affordable workforce and senior housing in Dakota County, with just over 300 of these units being federally funded housing units. And the CDA also administers the federally funded Housing Choice Voucher, also known as Section 8, rental assistance programs for the entire county that serves over 2,500 households. The CDA is a public housing authority. Under federal law, it is required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to have a resident of a federally funded public housing unit appointed to the CDA board. And this member is authorized to participate and vote on issues related only to the federally funded units. The CDA's enabling statute, Chapter 383D, establishes the 7-member CDA board. The members of the CDA board are the same members as the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. And Chapter 383D needs to be amended to allow the appointment for residents membership that is required by federal law. So this bill just kind of conforms to a federal requirement, and it should be pretty simple. If you have any questions, my testifier can help you out.
Hi, good morning, sir. If you would, just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your comments.
Chair Sanders, my name is Tony Schertler, recently appointed to be the executive director of the Dakota County CDA, which is the agency that's seeking your help today with this legislation. I can stand for any questions, but I think it's pretty straightforward. The Federal Register requires us to have one of our recipients of federal funding on our board so that they can talk about those issues that affect them.
Thank you, Mr. Schertler. Members, any questions, comments, discussion to House File 2956? Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against House File 2956? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2956 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2956 is on its way to the General Register.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
All right, we'll go back to the agenda then. House File 1089, Representative Rarick. And Representative Rarick, we expect you to be as quick as Representative Kosnick was.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, sir. I will go ahead and move House File 1089 to be referred to the General Register. Welcome, and to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will keep my comments here basically related to what your committee deals with. I do have an amendment quickly to alter.
Okay, we have an author's amendment. Looks like the A3 in your committee packets. Do you have a brief explanation to that, Representative Rarick?
On line 3.3, where it is giving authority to the local fire marshal, we're going to strike fire marshal and insert authority having jurisdiction. Not all municipalities will have a fire marshal, so this gives them the ability to have the local authority having jurisdiction if they do not have that. And then on line 3.4, originally we were going to require within 7 days they had to accept or deny the application. We're changing that to 14 days. So I'll get into that a little bit more as I describe the bill. Or is this a different?
Do we have the amendments?
Okay, members, the A3 in your packet is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, if perhaps Representative O'Driscoll could help me with the protocol for freshmen presenting before our committee. Did we maybe miss something? I'm just checking because I wasn't aware of Representative Rarick having presented here before.
Chair, did you want me to comment on that?
At your own peril. any discussion to the A3? Seeing none, all in favor of the A3 to put the bill in the shape that the author wishes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A3 is adopted. Representative Rick, to your bill, and again, we will, I know this came from public safety, we'll try and focus most of our comments in this committee to the relationship between this bill and the municipalities. We'll extend a little latitude to our firefighters that are here today as well, but as much as we can, let's keep the conversation today to the jurisdiction that this committee has over this bill. Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And quickly to Mr. Representative Nash's point, I believe that was for the first committee you apply to, not each time you come to a committee for the first time. So.
No, that's not the interpretation.
They all look hungry.
No.
Anyway,
Chair. Mr. Chair. Perhaps we just lay this bill over till we get that matter resolved.
So, beginning at 2.26, kind of the first point that begins with this committee. This section B describes that you cannot sell to someone under the age of 18, and that you must check ID when selling. So that is something we wanted to make sure was clear, that no one under the age of 18 could be buying fireworks. Section C, the beginning sections are actually in current law right now. There were some questions brought up. Currently in law, it is limited to $350 that can be charged for your application. And if you have a second or third site within that jurisdiction, they can only charge you $100 maximum for those subsequent sites. That is remaining the same. We are not changing that. The parts of Section C that we are changing is partly with what the amendment dealt with. This would be having the local authority receiving the application and then having 14 days to accept or deny the permit. And all permits would have to be applied for before June 1st. Because of the nature of this industry being so centered around the 4th of July is why we are doing that, you know, requiring the short turnaround time. But it'll be similar to a building permit. Each city council or town board wouldn't have to deal with this directly. They would establish a policy like they do with a building code, and then their staff would be able to decide and accept or deny a permit based upon the policies put in place by the city council. So we believe the 14-day turnaround is plenty of time for the staff to accept or deny, but then that gives the people applying, they know whether they can move forward with their planning or if they're going to be denied. Under number one, this is again already in state statute, but you cannot impose any extra fees on these businesses. The $350 application fee is the only fee that can be charged. We do not want to have excessive fees being charged to try to keep people from doing this. So that's why that is in there. There was a question on Section 3, so in case there is, again, this is not saying that the local jurisdiction cannot require a bond or insurance provisions. They cannot require bonding or insurance that exceeds what they require of other businesses. So again, we cannot make it so burdensome or, you know, the cost to be so high that they wouldn't be able to afford to do it. So they can require insurance and bonding, they just can't do it in such a way that they go way beyond what they do for any other business that would be similar. And then, let's see, I missed the section where it limits. I'm missing this. We are limiting the dates of sale from June 1st until July 10th, and that is the reason why we are sticking with allowing tents and other temporary structures for sale, because we are not going to permanent year-round sales. We feel that the cost would be too high for people to have to build a permanent structure and then meet all of those codes for a six-week window of sales. So that is why we are leaving the temporary structures as part of the bill. And then under section number four, one of the main changes from the bill last year, we are making sure it is very clear that the local jurisdictions absolutely have the authority to pass an ordinance or other restrictions to limit or ban the use of fireworks and the sale of fireworks within their jurisdiction if they choose. We are not, the bill previously made it unclear whether they could do that, and it seemed like the state statute was saying they had to allow this to happen. This is saying that a local city absolutely has the authority to ban fireworks sales or use if they decide. In section E, there was a little question. We give the same authority to the county, but we do believe the way it is stated that if a county decided to ban within their county, the language does state that a statutory city or town could enact an ordinance, rule, or regulation that would prevail over the counties. So even if a county could ban them and then the city could do an ordinance to allow them, or the other way around, a county could say they're okay, but a city could say no, not here. So the more local authority would always have the prevailing jurisdiction. That is basically the bill as it pertains to this committee. I guess one of the biggest reasons I'm bringing this forward is, you know, we currently have fireworks allowed here, but we have three neighboring states, Wisconsin and North and South Dakota, that will sell the type of fireworks that we're looking to expand to Minnesota residents, and it is estimated we are losing between $5 and $6 million in sales taxes to those three states. So we're hoping to be able to capture that income here for Minnesota and hopefully be able to allow people to do what they're already doing. If you drive around on the 4th of July, you know they're already here. So we're hoping to, you know, make it more legal, or make it legal for people so they feel more comfortable and that we collect the sales taxes. So I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess we made the motion to send this to the General Register. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, and the last point that was made here about sales taxes, and on line 3.6, we're adding a fee. And as I've heard Representative Day or Chair Davids say many times in the past, that a fee is a tax and a tax is a fee. Shouldn't this go to taxes so that they can take a look at it? Because if we're basing it on this is going to raise taxes and we're charging a fee, both of those would, in my mind, would send this to the tax department.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. It's our understanding that this fee actually does not go into the general fund for the cities. Therefore, it's not a tax implication, and that's the understanding of the tax committee as well, and they're saying that it could go to the general register. So according to the mandate from the OSA, the license and permit revenues are separate account within local government general fund, and doesn't go directly into the general fund, which at that point the tax committee wouldn't have jurisdiction over it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just raising that point.
Yep,
I
appreciate that, Representative Nelson. Absolutely. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Rarick, real quick question. I know in sections 3.27 to 3.30, you mentioned that the county could put a restriction on, but a local government could prevent it. And while I am a firm believer in local control, having been on a city council, what would happen if the local government that's preempting it doesn't have their own fire department or police department yet uses the county resources? And the counties, the reason why they're prohibiting it is because they're worried about taxing those resources. How would you kind of justify that then?
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, I guess, you know, that is a situation that could arise, but I believe that is something that, you know, we're putting the local control in because, if you know, they'll have, should have a relationship, and they should be able to work that out locally. I guess the point of this bill is to allow the more local authority to have the prime jurisdiction, just because it is, has an effect on them predominantly. For, you know, I realize the fire is part of that, but, you know, there are other, you know, they may know that their area wants to have this, and so they're maybe responding to their constituents by allowing it.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eric, I understand that, but it is that county jurisdiction that's going to bear the brunt of dealing with the issue if there is calls and fire. So I guess I would really question with joint powers agreements how that would work, but you might end up getting that question later on as well.
Representative Nash, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Joachim's question, there are, in many places, ordinances that are specific to one city. Particularly, we'll use Carver County as an example. When I served as mayor, there was a couple different things in the city of Waconia that weren't ordinances elsewhere, and the local deputies knew that they were enforceable in that jurisdiction but not in the others. So it was just a matter of them having the specifics for the city that they may be in the county, and it's never been a problem.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Nash, I understand that I'm talking about the extra cost and the burden, not necessarily knowing where they have jurisdiction over. So that was, it was more on the cost end.
Representative Nash.
And I'd certainly understand that, and that's also covered in our county, and I know you're a city, but in the county, that would have been handled under the contracting phase of the fire services. So if one jurisdiction contracted for fire services, that would be folded in when they were costing that out at the annual fire meeting or the fire contract each year.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. So this, I wonder if this is part of our jurisdiction then, but from what I understand, you're saying that if a local government decided to preempt their county and decide to sell fireworks, and the county decides, since they had a contract with them for fire and police services, that was going to cost them a lot more, they could then charge that city more?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, yes.
All right, thank you.
Representative Halverson, and then we'll move on to testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rarick, two questions for you. One, you had mentioned that we are going to get extra revenue as a state. Have you done any analysis on that, how much additional revenue the state is going to see? And then also, on the flip side, what the additional costs are going to be to the state? I know that since Minnesota kind of loosened up a little bit on our fireworks prohibitions, that injuries annually have actually doubled compared to what they were before. And so there are additional health care costs that the system is going to bear. In addition, property damage has also increased by 500%, which I find kind of remarkable. And so there are definitely dangers that are associated with fireworks and costs associated with those dangers, including increased healthcare costs and increased property insurance. So has there been any analysis about the cost of the revenue to the state versus the cost of other systems? And is there a balance there, or does one increase over the other?
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have been looking at that. One of the things that's making it a little bit tricky to know exactly what the increase would be is because we already have the one type that's legal, the sparkling devices, is unsure how much of those sales would diminish and be replaced with the new, the expanded type. So that makes it a little bit difficult to know the exact cost of, or, you know, what we would bring in compared to what we do right now. When it comes to the cost of, you know, response by fire and things of that nature, injuries, we've been looking a great deal at other states that have already gone through this, and we are actually seeing a decrease in the injuries per, I have a chart that showed since 1976, the injuries per 100,000 pounds of fireworks consumed was 38.1. It is now at 6.1 injuries per 100,000 pounds. The industry is coming up with much safer fireworks, and that is, as we've done the research, what we've looked at, the more dangerous types are the types we currently have right now. The types that emit sparks are far more likely to burn people and to cause fires because they're ground-based, they stay on the ground. So the type that are aerial tend to be cause far fewer injuries, and in Indiana we actually saw when they did this same thing, their injury rate went down. So we're hoping we would see the same here as well.
Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, well, Minnesota's actually had the experience, and the increases are significant enough. I mean, when you're talking 100 to 500%, so 100% increase in injuries annually versus and 500% increases in property damage. To me, what I hear in those two things is increased insurance costs and increased risks to homeowners in terms of their insurance costs, increased risks to people obtaining health care. Anytime we have increases in cost, that relates directly to what happens with insurance. And I'm anxious to hear from the fire chiefs to see if they concur with the risks involved.
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the one thing, when the numbers that you are noting, that was when we went from no fireworks being allowed to now allowing fireworks. So, of course, you're going to, when you first initiate something, you're going to see a drastic change in the statistics. But as you go over time and see what happens, you will see a leveling off. So, I mean, that's what we anticipate. You know, we saw that dramatic increase when we legalized fireworks. But that's where we're anticipating, like Indiana, we would actually see a leveling off or a decrease. Because the other side of it is, like I said, we have three states selling to Minnesotans right now. If you travel around the state on the 4th of July, you'll see they are here already. This isn't something that we're going to suddenly see a drastic increase in usage by passing this law. We're just going to be making the people who use them already, using them legally and giving them the ability to buy them in Minnesota so that we can collect the sales taxes and the income to the businesses instead of having that go to Wisconsin and the Dakotas.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. First testifier out on the list is Mr. Bruce West, State Fire Marshal.
Can we come back to you?
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. And for the record, my name is Bruce West, and I am your State Fire Marshal. And I will talk a little bit about some of the statistics when it comes to injuries and some property loss. It is the State Fire Marshal Division's mission to protect the safety and the well-being of the citizens of Minnesota. Included in this is our dedication to protect all Minnesotans, including innocent bystanders of all ages who may become victims of someone else's carelessness when igniting fireworks. Prior to 2002, essentially all consumer fireworks were illegal in Minnesota. In reviewing statistics on fireworks-related injuries from 1992 to 2001 and the period 2002 to 2014, keeping in mind that all consumer fireworks were illegal prior to 2002, and in with non-aerial and non-explosive fireworks when they were legalized, fireworks-related injuries in Minnesota have risen by 117% from 2002 to 2014. Even more concerning to me as your state fire marshal is that 50% of the injuries from 2002 to 2014 were suffered by persons 19 years of age and younger, and 22% were 9 years old and younger. Since 2002, statistics show a dramatic 460% rise in property damage loss from fireworks in Minnesota. My concern is also with additional fires that are caused by fireworks. I recently had a discussion in regards to wildland fires started by fireworks and the additional resources needed from area fire departments. Over the past 5 years, Minnesota fire departments have responded to 194 related fireworks incidents across the state of Minnesota. Changes to the current fireworks statute will exaggerate these statistics. For these reasons, I am opposed to the bill. Fireworks are dangerous. Even with well-supervised fireworks use, it is still exceedingly dangerous. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Next on the testifier list is Burnsville Fire Chief. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would, just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your comments.
Sure. Chair Sanders and committee members, I am B.J. Jungman. I'm the Fire Chief for the City of Burnsville, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. I appreciate you taking my testimony this morning as you deliberate on whether to expand fireworks in the state of Minnesota. As you can see in the audience, we have a number of supporters from the fire service in red shirts, we're easy to pick out, that are here in support of our position. As passionate public safety advocates, we continue to oppose any and all expansion of fireworks as they indisputably cause injuries and fires, which falls on the local departments to respond to. This proposed legislation would legalize the use of recreational explosives, also known as fireworks. People think of the fire department as responders, and we are charged with responding, but we're also charged with prevention. In our profession, the best emergency is one that never occurs. And changing this fireworks legislation kind of flies in the face of the prevention aspect that we have. When we look at the data and we look at what we've tried to do with children all the way through adults is not to play with fire, not to play with things that are going to hurt them, and this would allow that to be expanded. This proposed legislation would allow these recreational explosives to become projectiles that are as hot as road flares. We hear many times that it's a right of choice, and unfortunately with this expansion, the only person that was given the choice is the person that bought and ignited the recreational explosives. Not the bystanders that get injured, not the business or person whose property caught on fire. One of our challenges also is we have dry times of the year, and being able to regulate these during dry times in many rural areas where they can cause large expansive forest fires or brush fires. When you look at the regulations in this bill, the regulation that is referred to is the American Pyrotechnics Association standards. If you look at the APA and their makeup, it's all industry representatives, as opposed to the National Fire Protection Association, which has broad stakeholder involvement. If you look at NFPA 1124, which has similar regulations, it has members of the APA, members of the fire service, and members of the fireworks industry all sitting at the table as stakeholders and voting members. The APA does not allow the fire service to vote on their issues. So it's concerning to the fire service that the APA would be setting regulation for their own industry and that we're responsible for responding to that. We hear many times about other states in the regulation. We hear a lot about Wisconsin. Wisconsin loves Minnesota residents. If you read into the details of the Wisconsin legislation, anybody that lives in Wisconsin is required to receive a permit for purchasing and igniting fireworks in Wisconsin. In Minnesota, the proposed expansion does not invoke those requirements. And if you look at what Wisconsin is allowed to do, they're allowed to require additional insurance and bonding for not only the seller, but also the buyer and user. They can control when it's going to be used, where it can be shot off, and other restrictions such as local weather. When you look at what happens when a public display occurs, the fire department is involved in making sure that there's safe zones, fallout zones. We permit when the use is. We watch the weather and confer with the professionals that are shooting off those fireworks. It would be very difficult to have a number of these local permits or local retailers. We might be able to regulate the time that the retail is occurring, but we can't necessarily control when the fireworks are being shot off. And again, that becomes very difficult when you have windy conditions, and we're allowing them in urban environments where houses are very close and property damage and fires can occur very easily. We believe it's best to leave it to the professionals. Again, we don't believe the expansion here accounts for many of the important safety aspects, such as those fallout zones, the permits, the insurance and bonding for not only the seller but also the person that's going to be shooting off those fireworks. It doesn't allow for kill switches. Once these fireworks are ignited, they are going to detonate. These recreational explosives go off and there's no way to stop them. When you look at many of these fireworks that they're selling, they have multiple charges in one box. If something happens in the middle of that, there's no way, if it tips over, there's no way to stop that from occurring. There's also no training or certification required for the people that are going to be igniting these recreational explosives, as opposed to the professional operators. Items that would be legal, like bottle rockets, have flammable debris that comes out of the sky after these. And again, that is concerning in an urban environment for property damage and in a rural environment for brush fires. As you heard from the state fire marshal, there's a lot of data to back up the injuries that we've seen. We agree that sparklers are dangerous, and we oppose them from the beginning. And we believe that this aerial, or the use of aerial devices, will only make that worse. You can look at the Michigan data. There are other states that prove that the expansion of fireworks will cause additional injuries. And the other data point that you heard was the per pound injuries. Those per pound injuries include professional displays. They don't separate out, to the best of my knowledge, the difference between retail and the wholesale displays. Some of you may be thinking that the current law is not enforced well enough, but our law enforcement community must make priority decisions when there are numerous calls. There's no reason to believe that there will be fewer 911 calls because of this legislation. We believe that most citizens are law-abiding, and that we will see a significant increase in use if the fireworks bill is or fireworks are expanded in this state. Many of you think that this is a simple issue of personal freedom and having fun. I ask you to think about many other impacts that this may have, such as neighbors, livestock, pets, veterans with PTSD, and the community at large. I'm going to show you a quick video now that took place in Florida just a few years ago. As you can see, this type of unanticipated event harms property and individuals, and a bucket of water or a fire extinguisher can't stop this. And this is a fireworks retail environment that is in a tent, which is similar to what we would be experiencing.
It's the 4th of July in Port Richey, Florida. But this is no ordinary grand finale. A tent loaded with fireworks has gone up in flames. The explosive blaze nearly incinerated customer Andrea Bergman and her 5-year-old son Griffin.
Everything was burning, burning, burning. I couldn't get out. It was like a nightmare. I said, Griffin, run. Run, Griffin, run.
The two escaped as $70,000 worth of bombs erupted at their backs. Firefighters moved in cautiously, knowing they too could be pummeled by the random assault of rockets.
Griffin has second and third degree burns. I had second degree burns all over my legs. I'll be scarred for life, literally, physically and mentally.
Three fireworks hit me, but my mom, more fireworks hit her. I was okay. We were lucky we were still alive, but my mom was almost dead though, but she's still lucky too.
On a day commemorating the battle for independence, Andrea and her son are glad they didn't become casualties of war.
So I could sit here and show you many more videos, but in the effort to save time and keep my testimony short, there are many fires where fireworks have caused additional damage and injury. Fireworks do cause fires, and the expansion of the law will cause more fires. To paraphrase Governor Dayton's veto message in 2012, it is the government's foremost responsibility to protect the safety and well-being of its citizens. Sometimes that requires laws which protect citizens from others in order to protect innocent bystanders of all ages who could become victims of someone else's carelessness or accidental injuries. We want to acknowledge that Representative Rarick has offered to direct the use of a portion of the sales tax receipts from the fireworks sale towards firefighting equipment in small departments and the fire safety account. While this is greatly appreciated, we can't in good conscience support this bill to legalize recreational use of explosives. Make no mistakes, fireworks injure people, cause property damage, increase insurance premiums, increase the local demand on services for police and fire, and put responding firefighters and police officers at risk. So why take a chance? We ask you to join the long list of organizations opposing the expansion of the fireworks due to the increased risk to public safety. And those people are the Minnesota Chapter of American College of Emergency Physicians, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Fire Department Association, the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, the Fire Marshals Association of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chapter of International Association of Arson Investigators, the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today and for your time.
Thank you, Chief. Representative Halverson, did you have a question?
I do have a question for Chief Youngman. Chief Youngman, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for recognizing that we have big professional fireworks displays that go on all around the state. And in Eagan, where I represent, our local town festival is always the Eagan 4th of July Fun Fest, and we have one of the best fireworks displays in the state, and the Lions and the fire department get together and they put on an amazing show for tens of thousands of citizens in our state. So we definitely have some great opportunities because the fire departments help us run professional displays. So thank you for that. Quick question, how sure are you that there will be more fires if we expand the use accessibility of fireworks?
Chief?
Yep. Chair Sanders, representatives, given the data that I've seen, I would anticipate my professional opinion, I can't guarantee anything, but my professional opinion is that we would see an increase in fires. The hard part sometimes is attributing these because it's small pieces of debris, and our fire investigators will call a fire undetermined unless to the point of a reasonable doubt they can prove what occurred. You see a lot of undetermined fires because it's difficult to determine the actual cause, but I would suggest that across the state we will see some sort of increase,
and that's significant. So in fire department, excuse me, sorry, Mr. Chair, Chief Youngman, fire departments like mine in Eagan have struggled for years to maintain their volunteer fire department status, and we have mostly a volunteer fire department status up until just a few years ago when we found we needed more hired staff, which is a cost to our city and a cost to our taxpayers. And I would see an increase in fires around the state putting more pressure on fire departments that are trying to stay volunteer for the most part, and that is a concern for me in terms of another way we might see additional costs. I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Chief?
Chair and representatives, I would agree with that assessment that we would anticipate some sort of increase. It's hard to quantify what that would be, but given what we've seen in the data, we would anticipate some sort of increase.
Any other questions for this testifier before we move on? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chief Youngman, you mentioned something about part of the sales tax going to fire departments for fire equipment. I don't see that in the bill. I understand that was mentioned at an interim hearing about the possibility of that, but I don't see any amendment to do that or any of that mentioned in the bill at all. I guess that's more of a question for Representative Rarick.
Yes, Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I did have initially present that as an amendment to this bill. I'm talking to Chair Davids right now. We're probably going to be moving that forward as a separate bill through the tax committee. That way it would be dedicating 25% of the sales tax to the Volunteer Firefighters Assistance Grants Fund and then 25% to the fire safety account. And we're going to be moving that forward. And so whether this bill passes or not, if we can get that get it through committee and get that included in the tax bill, our current fireworks sales would also go to that. You know, as we said, there's increased costs, and I realize that. So we're saying that two other states have previously done this, and that's where we got the idea from. to help the fire departments meet the extra costs.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is sort of trust me. We'll pass this bill and trust me that we'll get a tax bill passed with that information, with that piece in it. I guess it makes me even more uncomfortable about the direction this bill is going, right to the floor. So I guess I'm going to have to oppose the bill because of that. I mean, I don't, if we're going to do it, we should do it as one piece so that the two pieces tie together. Otherwise, we're passing the extra cost, and we may or may not get a tax bill passed with that information in it. So we're basically buying a peek and a poke, I guess, is the term. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just would like to piggyback on to Representative Nelson's question. You know, when we've talked about increased costs, and we certainly have to consider that, and, you know, and you have an answer for that, but obviously there's an increased safety risk. And so I'm wondering, why is compliance with NFPA 1124, the 2006 edition, not mandatory as it is in virtually every other state that has recently enacted fireworks legislation, as you've talked about? I'm wondering why it's not in this bill, Representative Rarick.
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I talked with Representative Rosenthal. He was the one who raised the question previously. Unfortunately, since the time he raised that till now, I haven't had enough time to research that and investigate it. I have said if that NFPA standard gives us the same, it was my understanding when we did this that the NFPA did not define fireworks as well as the APA did. And what we know, there was a concern before that, well, if the APA changed their definition, it would change our law. So what we did in this bill is when we defined it to the APA standard, we tied it to the current date that was released in 2001. So even if APA changes their standard, our law will not change. It will continue to be meeting the same standard. So they could change from the 1.4, you know, grams and all the different requirements. That will not change our law if the industry changes their standard.
Representative Seltzer.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. But so are you saying that what I heard Chief Youngman say was that the kind of the gold standard is the National Fire Protection Association standard. Are you, so I guess I still don't understand why you're using the APA standard.
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it was when I was going through this originally, it was my understanding that the NFPA standard dealt more with the structures and didn't define the types of fireworks as clearly. That's why we went with the APA standard. I'm looking into that. If the NFPA standard does define it, the fireworks standard, then I'm willing to make that change to the bill.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick. And I appreciate that spirit, but just having heard the increase in injuries, property damage that's going to inevitably occur with this expansion, I'm very sorry, but I think I'm going to have to oppose your bill.
And thank you, members. And members, again, while certainly we can take safety and those issues into consideration when voting, let's try and tailor our questions and our comments from here on out to this committee's jurisdiction over the bill in front of us. And we said one more testifier. Are there any more questions for the chief? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, does your local jurisdiction outlaw backyard campfires?
Chief?
Chair, representatives, my local jurisdiction does not prohibit campfires, but it does require a permitting process.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair. Chief Youngman, and it's hard to ask this question because I know sometimes we delve in speculation and what's going to happen, but that's part of our responsibility, just is to think about the unintended consequences some bills may have. I know for taxpayers, joint power agreements for cities are very important. It helps us spread resources across jurisdictions and save taxpayer money. I can't help but think, let's say Dakota County bans these types of fireworks from being sold. And let's say Burnsville chooses to uphold the Dakota County ban, but Egan, sorry, Representative Halverson, decides that they want to do it. And I know there's a lot of things and a lot of thoughts that go into why you want to do a joint powers agreement with another city, but when it comes to something like this where so many more calls and injuries can happen, would that maybe make you hesitate on whether or not you'd want to do a joint powers agreement?
Chief.
Chair Sanders and representatives. I don't know that it would make us hesitate. As public safety professionals, we keep responding to emergencies as the heart, and we will respond. And many times you hear mutual aid agreements as we all help our neighbors when major events occur, but yet we all take this profession very seriously and, again, want to prevent any of those from occurring. So I don't know that it would cause us to not enter into a joint powers agreement, but it might be a question that comes up as you're trying to form a joint powers agreement for, let's say, a combined fire department, as you're trying to get those, as you had asked a question before about the sheriff's office, the same thing for the fire department is, how consistent are the local ordinances, and how do we make sure that we're enforcing the right ordinance in the right community and all that?
Thank you.
Any follow-ups, Representative Joaquin? We're good. With that, thank you, Chief, for your testimony. Appreciate you coming for us today. With that, Ms. Ann Finn from the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Mr. Chair members. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We have long opposed any expansion of consumer fireworks in Minnesota. We agree with everything that the fire service has said about the risk of injuries and property damage caused by fireworks. But today I'd like to focus my testimony on the issues raised by local elected officials.
Thank you.
For people, and you heard this already, for people who enjoy watching fireworks, there are hundreds of fireworks displays throughout our state that are offered by cities. These displays are put on by professionals in places where people can view them safely. And they are also well publicized so that people who want to enjoy them can, and the people who do not want the exposure can plan accordingly. We believe that the local control provided in this bill will not result in compliance by the public if the devices are more widely available. And we've seen this with the existing law, the existing ban. We talked about Section 1C and the now 14-day turnaround time for a permit that would be required by the bill. We believe this is unrealistic, particularly because many city councils would be the authority having jurisdiction, as the bill describes it. And in smaller communities, and we do have more than half of our 853 cities are very small and have staffs of just a couple of folks in City Hall. Some of these folks only meet once a month, particularly in the summer months. Also, in speaking with our general counsel in preparation for this hearing, he said he cannot think of another place in state statute where cities have a time limit this tight for responding. Further, the bill is silent on what happens if the municipality does not respond in the 14-day window, and this ambiguity may lead to litigation between vendors and city governments. The fireworks allowed under this bill will impact neighborhoods and communities. Aerial fireworks travel uncontrolled, typically away from the person who lights them. They can reach neighboring properties, homes, roads, businesses, public buildings, public lands, lakes, and innocent bystanders. Likewise, noise travels. The increased use of fireworks will create conflicts between neighbors over noise, debris, and property damage, and cities will be left trying to help people resolve these disputes. And they'll have more difficulty doing that if the offending fireworks are legal. Finally, the bill increases the financial burdens for property taxpayers. Expanded sale and use of consumer fireworks will increase local enforcement costs and fire calls and will generate nuisance complaints. I know many of you in this room have served on city councils, and you know that this is real, that these disputes between neighbors happen. And in fact, the person that I was hoping could testify before you today is an elected official who really wanted to focus his testimony on the conflicts that will happen between neighbors and the headaches that will cause in City Hall for the people that need to help resolve these conflicts. Finally, we just simply believe that consumer fireworks, particularly the aerial and explosive fireworks, simply do not belong in urban areas, and we would ask you to oppose this bill. I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Finn, for your testimony. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. Ms. Finn, maybe you could explain, I know the League of Minnesota Cities insures cities for liability. How would you see this maybe affecting a city's insurance and the taxpayers that are paying that insurance?
Ms. Finn?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, I did get a response to that question from our insurance trust, and they said that they will, on request, provide liability coverage for fireworks displays, I'm sorry, I'm reading this, in situations where city staff, usually the fire department, are handling the display. It's done as a special exception, and the city has to show they have a properly trained and certified fireworks operator in charge and meet all the other applicable requirements. So we take that pretty seriously, and when a city does come and ask us for this rider on their policy, we do our homework to make sure that they're actually implementing a display that we think meets the best safety standards they can.
Representative Joachim, any follow-ups? Any other member questions for this testifier? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Finn, for your testimony. Appreciate it. Any final member questions, discussion, comments to the bill in front of us? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rarick, I know a previous version of this bill went to the governor and was vetoed. And I guess if you had, we should be speculating, but is there any reason for you to believe that the governor has changed his mind and would not do the same thing with this bill?
Representative Rarick.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess it is our hopes that by putting the local control in and then by trying to move the sales tax provision, that would be two things that would make the governor reconsider his veto. But I do know it's very, very possible that he will veto it again.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, I wanted to say that it's very clear from the testimony that we heard today that the bill as it's written will have additional costs to our local governments, to our local taxpayers, through and to, frankly, the insurance premium payers. Because of all of that, I just kind of keep hearing cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching at every turn with this bill, and I don't think that this making additional costs trickle down to our local taxpayers makes a lot of sense. And so I'm sorry I won't be able to support your bill.
Any other member questions, comments, discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 1089 be referred to the General Register as amended. Roll call has been requested. The committee assistant will take the roll.
Chair Sanders.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Nope.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Mullery.
No.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Runbeck.
Aye.
Representative Seltzer.
No.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
There being seven nays and nine ayes, the motion is passed and is sent to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members. The final bill on the agenda for today is House File 2957, Representative Runbeck.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2957 came to me at the request of Ramsey County. I once represented parts of Ramsey County. This legislation would eliminate Ramsey County's current HRA and replace it with an EDA. Economic Development Authority, and this is already precedent for this legislation. The counties of Carver, Scott, and Dakota already have made this change, and this year Washington and Ramsey are requesting it. So I have with me here today County Commissioner Blake Huffman. He can better explain the bill.
Mr. Huffman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Let me, if I may, Mr. Chair, I'll just have a few remarks before answering any questions you'd have. The EDA request that we're asking today is coming from conversations we've had with many of our municipal cities, our partners, over the past several years. While cities have their own HRAs or EDAs, they ask that that Ramsey County become more involved in economic development opportunities in order to amplify their impact of economic development across jurisdictional borders. During the economic downturn, we saw many cities lose community development staff or shrink that department, and they were unable to participate in economic development work across across boundaries that lost significant resources or that lost significant opportunities. Rather than duplicate staff, the existence of a county EDA would serve all residents more effectively. A good example of what we're asking about is being seen on Larpinder Avenue. Larpinder Avenue runs through five cities within Ramsey County. There are multiple redevelopment opportunities in that corridor, but little coordination amongst the cities. The cities are Lauderdale, Falcon Heights, St. Paul, Roseville, and Maplewood. Through some early work with our city partners, we have been able to identify impact investment opportunities such as the intersection of Rice and Larpinder, which is an intersection that houses several cities right there, and are now working toward identifying specific projects for that corridor. The establishment of an EDA would give us the ability to consolidate those activities under one body and leverage our impact. The current HRA that we have right now, which is authorized by state statute, does not afford the flexibility we would need. Like other counties that recently sought this expanded authority, Ramsey County would like to be able to work on a variety of projects, including housing, transit-oriented development, business development, access, and infrastructure. The EDA would replace the current HRA that we have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Huffman. Any member questions or comments for the testifier? Well, good job, Commissioner.
Yes.
Members, any questions, discussion to the bill in front of us? Seeing none, I don't know if we made a motion, so I'll make a motion. House File 2957 be referred to taxes. Any final discussion? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion. The House File 2957 be referred to taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2957 is referred to the General Register. Wow, to taxes. Thank you. Members, with that, we've concluded our agenda for today. We have a full agenda tomorrow during the day, and we actually will not be meeting tomorrow evening. Yesterday in transportation, they took all the rulemaking out of the Real ID planning bill. So we don't need to see that tomorrow evening. So should just be a morning session tomorrow. With that, thank you all for a good committee. We are adjourned.